Next Chapter Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is how you start an album. You come out with a banger. Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground. It's by the White Stripes off their 2001 release, White Blood Cells. It's number 497 out of 500 on the 500 with Josh Adam Myers. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in, everybody, because you're tuning in to the only podcast where each week me and a guest go through Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums list from 500 down to numero uno. And these are the final episodes. You've only got 496 more after this one, because our expiration date is May 31st, 2028. This is it. I'm not making any more after May 31st, 2028. So make sure you paid for your Spotify's, make sure you paid for your Apple Music, make sure you paid for whatever way you guys listen to music. Stream these albums and then listen to the podcast. You don't even have to listen to the albums because the podcasts are standalone eps, but it always kind of helps. So from the bottom of my heart, I got to do this. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in again. Tell your friends, tell your guidance counselor, tell the guy that works at Enterprise to subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast. Please, please, please subscribe to the podcast and rate and review. That's a good song. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast. Come on, motherfucker, subscribe. And don't forget to rate and review. It's like very, it's very Oliver, you know. I did some musical theater back in the day. I did one play in high school. Didn't get the part I wanted. I threw a fit and never came back. Yep, Kitty Bradley, don't think I haven't forgotten. You know what? I'm going to go down to Seneca Valley today, find out if Kitty Bradley, the theater director, is there, and I'm going to go, see, Kitty, I turned out all right. I didn't need to be fucking Jorbe in Carnival. I didn't have to, because look at me. I'm a mildly successful comedian. I had my own TV show. I was cut out of it, but I had one. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for tuning in again. I love this so much, and I love all of you. So everybody that's reaching out and saying how much they're enjoying the 500, it means the world to me, because this is a passion project. I'm going to do this shit on my own, regardless if you're listening or not. I want to experience these albums. I want to be moved, and I hope these albums and these podcasts have been moving and affecting you. So the people that are reaching out, I love you so, so much. It's been a great week. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland right now. I'm home for Thanksgiving. So I'm going to be on my mom's couch doing dick nothing, because my mom won't let me use her car because I wrecked two cars back in 1999. So I am stuck in Salisbury, Maryland, when I get out there, tomorrow. So, I'll be hanging out. The reason I came back to Baltimore was Ryan Sickler and I were doing a couple shows at Jimmy's Famous Seafood. It was incredible, man. The crowds were incredible. We sold out two nights of it. And then we did a meet and greet. And, man, I just want to give a shout-out to one guy in particular. All the fans that came out and told me how much they loved the 500, told me how much they loved my episodes on the Crab Feast or the goddamn Comedy Jam or my stand-up, whatever. I appreciate each and every one of you, but one guy really affected me, Joe Radke Jr. This dude came up and he just expressed how important Ryan and myself and the Crab Feast have been to his life, and he started tearing up, and then I started tearing up, and then we were hugging each other, and it was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever been a part of, because I had never seen how much podcasts mean to some people. And it just really, man, it just really touched me in my heart. You thought I was going to say something else? Nope, it touched my heart. Get your heads out of the fucking sewer. Okay? No dirt, just beauty. I love that guy to death. So, Joe, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for coming up and expressing how important we are to you. And that meant the world to me. Also, if you came to the jam last Thursday at the Roxy in Los Angeles, thank you for being a part of that show. Man, was it just incredible. Sklar Brothers killed it. Becky Robinson killed it. Jim Jeffries annihilated doing Bohemian Rhapsody. Bill Burr coming from a benefit and then rushed his ass over there. We fucking murdered the crowd doing Welcome to the Jungle. It was just such a fantastic show. So thank you, everybody, that came out to that. That brings me to this week's guest, okay? This week's guest is one of my best friends and basically the reason I have a career. I met this guy at the Unknown Theater. This little theater in Los Angeles is like the most important place to my career. It was run by a guy named Chris Kovics. He used to put on these really, really weird plays with these elaborate sets. Sarah Tiana and Laura Valdivia used to run this comedy show there every Sunday night. And right when I started stand-up, I found my way into that theater with my buddy Angelo Bowers. And it was just a community, man. It was like the stand-up show was good. But after the stand-up show, there was this big jam of musical instruments where all the comics just would drink, smoke pot, and just perform shitty cover songs. And I wasn't very good at stand-up at the time. I was kind of like the ringleader of this this little jam session we did every Sunday night. And Chris Porter brought Bill to one of the jam sessions, and we hit it off, and then we just kept in touch throughout the years. And then right in 2014, when I was like really depressed and I didn't know what I was going to do in my career anymore, I was thinking about moving to New York. I had done New Faces in JFL, which is like a big deal, but it was supposed to change my life. You know, I was like, oh my God, I got New Faces. Like, I'm probably going to be able to quit my job and just, you know, I'll just be a shooting star from that point on. Like, you know, fuck you, Spearmint Rhino. I'm never DJing again. That's what I thought. But it didn't happen. And so when I was like completely disillusioned and had no idea what to do anymore, I ran into this guy and I said, hey, man, I got this show idea where comics go up, they do stand up, then they tell a story about a song, and then they sing it with a live band. And Bill's like, I'm not singing, but I'll play drums. I shoot my special in June, set the show up for July. So he was the headliner on the first goddamn comedy jam. And from that moment on, he's been one of my best buds. He gave me one of my first cartoon acting jobs. It was funny, too, because when I asked him to do this episode, I was like, hey, man, I was like, so I want you to do the White Stripes. And he's like, dude, I don't fucking like the White Stripes. He's like, I mean, I like them, but I don't like love them. He's like, I want to do Led Zeppelin 4. And I'm like, yeah, man, you can do Led Zeppelin 4. But that's going to be in like 8 years, bro. I need you now. And so he's doing it. You've seen this guest on his hit animated show, which I'm on, F is for Family on Netflix. You know him from the Monday Morning Podcast. You know him from The Front Runner, which is in theaters now. Or maybe you know him from one of his incredibly hilarious specials on Netflix. Or if you really want to see something good, go back onto HBO Go and find his half hour. It is fucking hilarious. He's done probably 30 goddamn comedy jams, each time dressing up as the drummer that he's performing as. One of the greatest comics working today, and that motherfucker is dressed like John Bonham, full on wig, full on mustache, same outfit, and then he goes up and he crushes his songs. Don't forget to listen to the end of the podcast, where we are going to spotlight a new artist that was directly influenced by the White Stripes. Also, rate and review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500, guys. So here you go with number 497 out of 500. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Burr with the White Stripes, White Blood Cells.
Well, you're in your little room and you're working on something good. But if it's really good, you're gonna need a bigger room. And when you're in the bigger room, you might not know what to do. You might have to think of how you got started standing in your little room.
Oh my God. What a great way to start this. That was it. That's how we started. Bill Burr, finally.
I realize this is going to take you so long. We're probably going to have a falling out and not be friends for like albums 375
That's
to 225.
Happening.
Our reunion is around album 180. And then when you retire like Carson, I'll show up.
Album 497. That's where it is. So we can, so this will go well, and then we'll break apart right around 451. But we'll get back together. Bill, I've said this a million times.
I don't like you.
I know. I know you don't.
No, I thought you were going to say that about me.
No, I love you. Because of you, I have a career, dude. In this weird, weird way, just you doing the goddamn comedy jam is one of the best fucking things that ever could have happened. Me running into you that night. If Chris Porter never brings you to the Unknown Theater to play drums with us that night,
you would have met somebody else because you're driven. But if you want to put all this weight on it, okay.
I don't want to put all the weight on it.
No, I went to the top of the observatory. And I said, give Josh Adam Myers a career. I commanded Hollywood.
It's going all
and
right
they said,
so far.
Who is that crazy bald man on top of that wonderful structure? And I was arrested and spent 3 days in jail, and you never came to bail me out. You're welcome for your career.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you so much. You are a huge music fan. I think that's kind of where we started to connect on.
I don't go too deep.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, what did you
I'm all
up?
Over the place, you, but no, I don't.
Actually,
I skim,
actually,
dude. I skim.
No, I don't think that's true because I was thinking
as a bird now.
I was thinking about all the songs that you've done, and they're all in the same genre. All the songs. So Bill has done the goddamn comedy jam. You've done it like
a lot of goddamn times.
A lot of goddamn times. And I was just thinking of some of the shit that you did. Custard Pie by Zeppelin, Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue, Paradise City, Guns N' Roses, Highway to Hell, Cowboys from Hell, Rhinosaur.
A lot of hell.
Sweet Emotion.
Rhinosaur is a bit of a departure. I actually got out of the 80s and the late 70s.
And you picked the most obscure alt-rock song that you literally preface it to the audience like, all right, so I'm about to do this song. Only
now,
two
you guys
people
like again? Soundgarden? Yeah. All right. Well, you know all those ones you love? This is one you're not going to know, but this fucking, you should know this song. I just thought it was like in five or something, and it's still, like, I'm obsessed with that band. Oh, I never told this story.
What's that?
On any podcast. I actually had an idea for a character on F is for Family for Chris Cornell.
That you were going to have him do his voice?
I kept pitching it in the room, and everybody thought it was kind of funny, but every, like, any musician friend I had loved the idea. So it was basically, he was going to play the character. You know, Kevin plays guitar on the show, right?
Yes.
So he was going to play this character where, you know, the local guy that just, he's the best guy in town, but for some reason he just never made it. And sometimes it's because he didn't leave town. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he got distracted by a relationship. Sometimes he does drugs.
It's always
sometimes
drugs. Just, it's always drugs, kid, or family.
Woman, just something fucked him up and he got off track, right? All of a sudden he's driving a UPS truck, right?
So, which is a great job, by the
so
way, if you
this
drive
guy
for UPS.
Did not step in any of those pitfalls. Falls. His downfall, he was the greatest singer and should have made it, but his downfall was he couldn't sing in common time. He could only sing in five or seven. So then he was going to, you know, almost pop music is in four. So he was going to get together with Kevin and all his band, and they'd have this great frontman lead singer, but he would be singing in seven as they were playing in four. But if you do the math, like every four bars, it comes back around when he's on the one.
Yeah.
So when he went, like, actually, he would stop on the eighth note of four. That would be his one, and then they would be like an eighth note off. And he would just always look back and was going to yell, don't worry, it's going to come around again. And he was going to keep singing the song. So... funny thing enough, like all my ideas, it's been done before. I didn't realize Frank Zappa, I saw this clip. I can't remember if somebody told me that after I told them the idea or if I just stumbled upon it watching some Terry Bozzio, probably Vinnie Colaiuta or something.
Yeah.
They were playing this song as Frank Zappa, so it was like in fucking 1917 or whatever. What the fuck they were playing. And the singer was singing in four. So he had to kind of just like be his own clock, you know?
Yeah.
After, you know, whatever. He's singing in four after the first four beats and he goes back to one and they're continuing playing or however the fuck it worked. And it was incredible. And it was funny. You listen to it. It still sounded great, but something just sounded a little off. Dude, I can't tell you how many like obscure music ideas I've had and somebody's already done them.
You know what's funny that you mentioned Soundgarden, like, and how complicated the band is? Well, we were doing one of the jams. I remember, like, 2 days before the show, I went up to Joel, and I was like, dude, I want to do Outshine. That's what I want to play. And then I left, and the next day we had rehearsal. And when I showed up, him and Nick were so mad at me because they were like, dude, we're not trained monkeys. That is progressive rock. Do you understand how hard it is to learn that beat and play that song? And I didn't right. even, I didn't even hear it. Like, and now that I listen to it, I'm like, oh. And we did Rhinosaur. I'm like, oh, yeah, they do have a different time signature.
No, and this, like, and this is the thing about, like, from what I understand is, like, that was a natural thing.
Yeah.
They didn't do that on purpose. Like, you can kind of hear a band that's doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually, you know, the drummer has like, you know, a 20,000 piece kit, and there's the bass player with, you know, I play a 12 string bass and shit. Let's see, like those bands, you know what I mean? There's all nerds and no chicks there.
Yeah.
That's when they're doing it on purpose. But when they actually do it organic, it's like you don't really, unless you're really like into music,
yeah.
you don't even notice. And I saw something recently. I was listening to Nikki Sixx. He had this thing that he was doing, like, what the hell is this? Something about, like, guitar riffs. So he had all these great guitarists. I saw this one was Slash, and Slash, I think he was talking about when he was with Velvet Revolver, that he had come in and he had this cool riff. He goes, but it was in 7.
Somebody, what song is that, Set Me Free?
No, they didn't do it. They ended up, air quote, fixing it and putting it in 4. And I was thinking, like, oh, I wish... Just yeah. to switch it up, put it in yeah. 7.
What did you grow up listening to? I mean, is that the music that you gave me for the jam? Or all those songs what you grew up listening to? Like, what is your history? Because you play drums. So how did all of that, you know, get you to picking these songs that you did for the jam? Brother, or like...
It was just all drummers that I wanted to be when I was growing up. When I didn't like who I was and I was too afraid to talk to chicks in my grade.
Yeah.
And I used to, like, not talk... All I had to do, looking back, all I had to do was just say hello. If I literally,
yeah, but it's
if
so
I literally did that for like 6 days and came out of my shell, I think I would have been funny enough that, you know, I could have just lived a normal life.
But it's so
I really
hard.
Could have just lived a normal life. But instead, I felt like I had to do something on a stage. Like I was always thinking that. And if I listened to music or I listened to a comedian or I watched sports, anything great that I saw on TV, the next day I'd be doing my paper route, fantasizing that I would be doing that in front of all the people that I knew. And then the girl that I had a crush on saw me do it. But even
and
in the fantasy,
yeah.
I still never talked to her.
In the fantasy, you just walk by her, give her a look.
No, she just saw me and was like, wow, that guy's really cool. And that's where it ended.
So you never wanted to get with him. You just wanted to impress him. You just wanted the girl to go, look at Bill.
I was that fucking introverted that even in the fantasy, it was too much to say hello to him.
You know what's funny? As I'm going through, what kind of got me to start doing this was that I started like realizing, like, why do I get nervous doing these things that I love when I know one day I'm going to die? Like, I should be enjoying every moment. So then I started going through all these like existential crisis prep things and like... The long and short of it is this, is that like, I want to find, you know, the girl of my dreams. When I see a girl out, I'm going to ask her out. And I see them all the time and I go, maybe the next one. And I just keep moving. I'm going to say something.
You're up there singing songs fucking nuts.
No, at the jam is one thing. The jam is one thing. I'm talking about the Gelsons buying produce.
Oh, then
you know
all you
got
to,
I mean?
You know, how did you learn how to be a comedian? You went up on stage.
I went up and I failed.
I failed
for many years. I still fail now, but it's like, at least now I know to handle the failure a lot better.
I got over my fear, all that. I just accepted bombing. And I treated bombing with women the same way I treated bombing on stage, which I would immediately call Patrice or Keith or Bobby. And I would tell them the story and then they would laugh and tease me or whatever and then tell a story of how they bombed or whatever. I just started doing that with women. Like, oh, my God, I just fucking said this to this chick and she fucking looked at me like I had three heads or whatever. And yeah, it was super embarrassing. But like, it only took like 6 weeks. And then, I don't know, it just doesn't bother you anymore. And you see the humor of it.
No,
you see the patheticness of walking around like, do you like me? Because I like you. Oh, okay. It's inherently funny.
It's so funny. So how did you start getting into this like hair? I wouldn't want to call it hair metal band stuff, but you're obsessed. The bands that you grew up listening to, Zeppelin, AC/DC, you know, like how did you
get Here's the thing. I grew up the first, I would say, real band. Because my mother was in charge of buying my albums at first. So I
What do you mean? You had to ask her to do it?
Well, or? I didn't have any money.
Well, of course. So but you could
stick an album under my little shirt.
No.
Try to walk out.
No, but I mean, like, I would tell my mom, I was like, I want the new Bon Jovi record, Slippin' When Wet.
How old
were
you?
I remember the first albums that I ever got were Run DMC, Raisin Hell, and then Bon Jovi, Slippery One Wet. So whenever
so
they 84, came out.
84, 85, 86. 84, so how 85. Old are you then?
I'm 38 now, so I think I was
like
about,
eight?
About six, seven. Actually, if it's 84, that's 85, very, it's 84,
did
85.
Did you have older brothers and sisters?
I had an older sister who was 2 years older than me. But she wasn't really
She's
into
already
music,
selling
like,
weed.
She had a killer album collection. Dude, my sister, imagine. All right, so me, and then imagine me, but as a woman with her life completely together and is a doctor and married to a district attorney and has never gotten in trouble and has three kids. And
wow.
Doesn't.
The holiday's got to be a little rough back
No, no, it's great. We actually get along really well. It's
no, I'm
actually,
just saying how the parents are like, what did we do with this one?
No, no, no. But I made more money than her in 2017. And I can now stand proud and know that as a comedian, I made more money than my sister. She beat me in 2018. But so far. But
you're like the 55 Brooklyn Dodgers when the Bums finally won one.
We finally won
That's
one.
That's right. You beat the Yankees.
She's 37-1. But I got one on her.
There you go.
I'm fine
That's
with
it.
That.
No one can chant.
No, but my sister never got into music. She was always into like the Beatles, and she was into, I remember, the Bengals. Those were the albums she had. I was always drawn to rock. To Walk Like an Egyptian.
The Bengals are a football team. And you know what's hilarious? Paul Verzey calls the Bengals the Bangles. And I always go, that is a female.
what did I call them?
What are they? You said the Bengals.
The Bengals, yeah.
No, the Bengals.
The Bengals. That's what I said.
B-A-N-G.
It's the same fucking
like
thing.
Gun, bang.
But it just with my Maryland
what
accent.
What sound does a gun make? Bang bang.
Bang bang. Bang bang. I shot them dead. Bang bang.
Who sings Our Lips Are Sealed?
The Go-Go's. That's the one you're obsessed with. That's the one that you keep calling.
That song fucking rocks.
Can you feel it?
I love it. But then you listen to the lyrics, so it's just like, yeah.
I haven't gotten to the lyrics.
People are always talking shit.
You know what's funny is that this is
and
the
first. I think they put it together succinctly.
This is the first album that I actually, this album that we're going to talk about is the first album that I really studied, and I mean studied the lyrics.
Oh, so we never got back to what, so my mother.
Yeah,
would,
get to that.
She bought me.
This is so funny because both of us have ADD horribly. So
no, no,
this
but
is
I pay attention when I'm on this shit.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Because I try to.
So we never really wrapped up how the fuck you knew about that music at 6 and 8 if your fucking older sister was already.
You know how I know? I knew because I listened to DC 101. I was always drawn to music. My dad listened
at
to music.
Six.
Dude, I was playing like piano at like 4, dicking around, and I was playing guitar by like 7, 8, and then drums I think I picked up.
Dude, you're
up.
Like one of those Asian kids. They can play like a concert by the time they're 3.
If my parents were a little bit stricter, I might have been able to do that, but
is
they
that
gave
what the
up.
Problem
they didn't
is
push
here?
Me. They didn't push me. They would have pushed me.
If you
I'd
go
be
on YouTube, I'm telling you.
Joshua
when
Bell.
There's kids, I'm telling you. They're the blue chip, number one draft pick.
The Asian kids?
They crush it. You see that little Asian girl playing Good Times, Bad Times? I've been trying to play this all my whole life. She played it so well, Robert Plant was watching it going, yeah, she goes, look at her. She's playing it like she fell off a log, like some old expression, like it's nothing.
That's hysterical. We all wish we could have an Asian child. So back to you. So how did you get?
So my mother, let's
your brother,
go so my mother bought me like Sing Along with Mitch Miller in the Gang.
What was that?
That was just like roll out the barrel, but you come home, Bill.
Oh, okay.
Baby.
Please don't just sit there. Come on and sing.
5 foot two, eyes of blue. You know what those 5 foot can do. I'm listening to that shit. 5, 6 years old. I'm listening to fucking Lawrence Welk. Winchester Cathedral.
The Four Freshmen, stuff like that. Like
the Kingston Trio.
It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song.
Kingston Trio. This is all the shit
Mickey
my dad
Finn,
listened to.
Dixieland,
oh,
Barbershop
yeah,
Quartets, Ted the, Heath and his orchestra.
All the music where somebody has to go to set like the tones or the keys or everybody knows.
Yeah, by the way, it's 40 people all playing at the same time. We were incredible. I have some of those albums because I bought them on eBay. And I'll tell you right now, if a fucking killer album.
Yeah.
Ted Heath, Swing is King. Ronnie Varrell, rest his soul, on drums, who also, he played the drums for Animal. Whenever you saw Animal, that was him.
Oh, from the Muppets. Yeah.
Now we see who best.
So my first real, I'm coming to school singing Roll Out the Barrel. It's really not making me any friends. I need to know what's up. I got Aerosmith's Greatest Hits. And I bought it when Aerosmith was broken up, when Steven was still in. It was that Jimmy Crespo guy. It was like a couple guys from Aerosmith stuck around, you know, and then Joe Perry was doing Joe Perry Project. So they put out a Greatest Hits album in the interim while they were, you know, cleaning up their lives before they came back with Done With Mirrors. So that was the first one I got.
Yeah.
But I got into Zeppelin late. I didn't like them when I first heard them.
Zeppelin?
It was too advanced from what I was. Dude, I went from, fucking, you know. Listen, soul of a woman was created. Like, what the fuck is this? The reverse echoes and stuff. It was a lot to listen to.
I remember when the first time I heard Led Zeppelin, my cousin had Led Zeppelin 4, and it was just in his tape player, and it was like Passover dinner, and I snuck away to his room and just would like push play on the tape player to start the album, and then I'd put his humidifier on because I thought it looked like the smoke effect. But it's definitely,
you were a cool kid, man.
I wasn't that I was cool. I was just wild, and I actually wish I still had some of that fearlessness that I had back then. Because now,
no,
it's
don't
like,
do that. That's how you die.
No. Not when it comes to like doing stupid shit. But like we were talking about going out and talking to a woman. Like it's like
do that.
I'm talking about being fearless on stage, like being able. And I feel like I'm getting there now with what I'm starting
going
to talk
to the
about.
Produce section and not being self conscious.
I just don't like being out in public so much. And when I go to the supermarket, I feel like it's just such an awkward place to be that I don't think that a woman would want me to hit on her. And even
that's the place to hit on them. Don't do it at the worst fucking place ever is to actually go out to a bar where they have their guard up. You got to catch them sleeping, man. They're looking at the turnips.
I know, God.
Then you come in with a little bit of charisma. Who goes into the grocery store thinking they're going to laugh?
Yeah,
and you put a smile on their face, you know? They see you're into food, you're cooking.
But in this day and age, like, you have to dress a little nicer, though. Well, this is like, I told you, this is my breakdown, like, midday outfit. I'm wearing, what do you call these? Capri pants right now, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
You look like you stumbled out of rehab.
I mean, in some weird way, I did. In some weird... So you grew up listening to Led Zeppelin. What was that like, hearing Led Zeppelin for the first time?
No, I didn't. I ended up getting a job in a warehouse. All these burnouts gradually got hired over there from like Walpole, Massachusetts. And like I came from a jock town, so it was all about sports. And like people loved music, but you didn't think you could do it. Mm-hmm. And then these kids showed up, and they you know, they were kids. We were 17, 18, and they're playing guitar, and they're playing all this shit on the radio. I'm like, you can... Like, I was like, oh, wow. Is that one of the two times in my life where I was just like, oh, you can just learn how to do that? Because that was before YouTube. These people were like invisible. There was no MTV. Well, maybe there was MTV. There was. But they were definitely way far away from you.
Yes.
They started putting on WZLX, which was the classic hit station. And then it was and they were more like Crosby, Stills, and Nash with some Zeppelin and all that.
In the warehouse? That's what they're...
Yeah, yeah. So they were this weird sort of... more folky.
Grab the package.
Yeah.
Take it to the car right now.
So we had this thing in the warehouse when you were working the scale, shipping. You controlled the radio.
Fuck, everybody wanted the scale then.
Yeah, so...
How often were you on the scale?
Once a week you'd get the scale, and then it was just... Yeah, and I would put on like fucking...
You put on the four freshmen.
No. I would put on like fucking... You know, AC/DC at like 8 in the morning on a Monday. And like, I remember this guy coming over who was just fucking so hungover, he almost puked at a barrel. He shut it. Dude, it's fucking too early for that shit.
Yeah.
I think I put on Maiden or something like that.
Fuck.
But
yeah,
then there was this one guy. He was like a cool dude, but he was also an asshole. When he was on the scale, I still remember it was like Thursdays, and it was called Edie All Day. And he would put the Edie Brickell New Bohemians tape in for the whole fucking day, and we just flip.
Oh, I love that song.
Just torturing us. I don't know why we put up with that, but there was just something hilarious.
You would think that a group of guys could be like, all right, dude, turn that shit off. Like, can you at least... Does she have any other records?
It fucked with the structure, because then someone could do that on my day.
I get it. No, I get it.
So you just
respect the rule. Respect the rule. I dig that. Yeah. I definitely dig that. So somebody started putting on Led Zeppelin for you then?
Yep, and then I saw these guys playing, so I tried to play guitar, and I really just sort of psyched myself out of it, that it was too hard. drums seemed more like sports, like I was growing up, you know, hit this, and it was very physical. And then I got into that, and then I just went into this, like, you know, like someone just goes into drugs for like 20, 30 years.
Oh, yeah, me.
Yeah. I went into like this John Bonham fixation. Like, he just, I just, the more I heard him play, the more live stuff I saw them. And then there wasn't, he did a couple of interviews early on. So even just hearing the sound of his voice when I finally heard like YouTube and I realized that, oh, that's him talking on In My Time of Dying. That's him, you know, or him counting off. You know, I'm so naive. I didn't realize like, yeah, the drummer counts off the song. So The Ocean, that's him saying, but I just didn't know, right? And then I started taking lessons again. And what's funny is I ended up taking drum lessons from this guy, like a 72-year-old Armenian guy who used to call himself the last of the great Armenian trap drummers. Frank Shushan was his name.
What's up, Frank?
Yeah, well, he was 72 back then. I lost touch of him. He'd be almost 100.
Rest
now,
in peace, Frank.
Yeah, I don't know.
We love you.
I don't know. You never know.
We love you. You were missed.
So he grew up, was a big band guy.
Yeah.
And so he got me into all of that shit. And what was weird, because I really wanted to kind of play the Zeppelin shit, but I kind of got in, fell in with him, which was a great, ended up being this great bass, because I had been listening to those songs and everything, so kind of put some swing in whatever I was playing. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of a classic me thing where I was just like, but I want to be doing this, but this guy's teaching me this, so I'm not, I never expressed it to him, because if I did, he would have taught it to me. Mm-hmm. But he was just like, oh, this, here's a kid who's just into what the fuck I'm into. So, and that's who I was back then. What are you into? I'm into whatever you're into, so you don't beat the fuck out of me. Like, that was basically my mindset from being a kid with, you know, orange hair.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
That's why I always hated those fucking punk kids.
Why?
Because they come in with the blue mohawk and they thought they were badass. I always want to be like, hey, buddy, you can wash that out.
You're like, you're stuck with
us. You can walk away from this life whenever you want. Fuck you and your safety pins and this whole fucking horse shit that you can just literally, you can literally wash that out, shave it down to a whiffle, and dress like Malcolm Young, and the next day you could walk in with a bunch of football players and not have a fucking problem.
That's true. Are there any redhead rock stars that are like super famous? Like
Josh Homme.
Who?
Josh Homme.
I mean, is that really, he's a ginger?
As far as I can tell. Or is that light blonde hair?
I think it's light blonde, dude.
Either way, he's dreamy.
He is dreamy. He's like 6'9", though. He's like a power forward. So by that point, when you started getting into Zeppelin, you were already into
Cindy
drums?
Cindy Lauper? I don't know if that was real.
No. She colored her hair.
Windows don't match the drapes. That's how dumb I am. Anybody can make it in show business. That's my goal here, to let you know that. The guy from Simply Red.
And
I think
What
was no? Didn't he do the
deep into your eyes and
is that what the song?
I had to do a palate cleanser because I've listened to this
what about
record.
The guy from Coldplay?
No, he's blonde. No, he's dark. He's dark hair. Chris Martin is dark hair. Nikki Six. I have no idea. He's been dyeing his hair black since he was since 1980.
He could be any further away from being a redhead. Raven, black hair.
I have no idea what any of their hair looks like.
Axl Rose, Jesus Christ.
There it is.
Where do we go now? Yep, I just bought the 30th anniversary of that album with my favorite fucking drummer of the 80s, rock drummer, Steven Adler.
Which we're going to be doing. Though I don't know what number that is on the list, but when I ask you to do this record.
That's when we have our falling out, when you don't invite me.
Dude, you're going to do Coma? Is that the fucking Led Zeppelin record that was kind of shitty? The one?
Coda.
Coda.
Coma.
I've never been a big Led Zeppelin fan, dude. I'm getting into them so I can talk to you more and connect with you. But I've always liked the hits.
I wouldn't say it's shitty.
It's not shitty. But that's like the one that's
Darlene.
Like...
Darlene.
Which is the bad one. Presence? No.
Presence is incredible.
See, I got to start listening. I kind of like... I've listened to the one, two, three. I've listened to all the hits.
I'm too... Look, he put together an album after Bonham died. It was shit that they listened to. They're like, it's good, but we don't want to release that. And then he put it out. For fans, it was nice.
Yeah. So what are you listening to now? Like, what's the kind of music? Because I remember we were in your car. We were coming back from smoking a bat. And you put on your friend's band. And it was like, it was rock, but it was like adult contemporary again. You started to get into the Michael McDonald part of your life where you're just like, you're listening to Anita Baker. Like, sweet love.
What is that? I am fascinated. There's no type of music that I'm not, including like DJ music. I'm just fascinated by like, what are people hearing? You know what I mean? That I'm missing. Like, what music did I not listen to get caught up that I'm that out of touch? By the way, I got to give a shout out. Me and Nia just saw that movie, Eighth Grade, Bo Burnham's movie.
Is it great?
Oh, my God. And the way he uses music in that movie is incredible. And I actually stayed through the credits to see, because, you know, he's...
They do the Arclight Presents, yeah.
To see if he did some of the music. But it's such an incredible... It's fucking...
Is that good?
It's really good. And what I loved was the way he used the music to show like every small event is just so huge when you're that age. It's like you and Gelson's. Like, I would love to hear Bo Burnham like score your thoughts when you're thinking of talking to that woman in the Gelson's, man.
Now I got to see it, man. I've been wanting to see it. I was going to go see it, and then I went to see Mission Impossible 14 or whatever it was.
I got to see that, too.
Which was fantastic.
I got to see Tom Cruise fucking kill it in the helicopter.
You love that. Oh, he learned how to fly to do that scene.
He is an insane person.
Dude, Scientology must have something on him, and he just wants to die, but he doesn't want to kill himself. So he's just like, what's the scene? Can you set me on fire?
He gets into shit, man.
I love him. I've never disliked him.
I want to know where you go to learn. I've seen that there's places where for airplanes you can learn like stunt flying. I mean, I don't even have 200 hours yet.
But you're at the point of your life and you got enough money, you can be like, I want to learn how to stunt fly, and you fucking learn how to stunt fly, dude.
No, you know what Mike Gelson's is? I'm afraid to go to airports that I haven't been to before because I don't know where the fuck I'm going. So when I go to land and they take, you know, follow hotel to Alpha, blah, 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 and they're trying to like refuel, and like the guys, they just do the hand gestures like I'm supposed to know what the fuck that means. I can't remember that from ground school. I've just been flying around making sure, you know.
You just fly over. All I see is from yours and Nia's Instagrams from when you do it, is you fly over really big homes and you guys just go, it's fucking beautiful.
No, there's all, like, I can, like, you know, transition airspace and all that. And there's like four or five airports that I am familiar with. But then there's some people that just like, they're mean. Air traffic controllers.
There's dicks in every profession.
And it's just like, they're intimidating when you don't know what you're doing. But if you know what you're doing, you know, you're just like, all right, he's a little grumpy or whatever. It's like the first time you get a heckler or whatever. But there'll be, you know. Whatever. Are we ever going to talk about the album?
Set it up. And then when I dive into it, we're fucking in, bro.
We're in deep water.
We're not there yet, but I'm still trying to figure out your musical background.
Okay.
So what do you listen to? What's the full gamut of music you're normally listening to?
All right.
You know,
let's just look at my last few downloads.
Perfect.
Why don't we do this?
Some of your favorite bands that I know, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, Guns N' Roses, you got it. You love Pantera. Uh-huh. So you're kind of, you know, you're like me. I mean, we're about, you know, 10, 11 years
apart,
but
in a way, just the way I grew up,
uh-huh.
You know, where it was just, I just grew up in a sports town. I grew up, you get into fights. I mean, nothing like,
so you need a soundtrack
crazy,
for that.
And
you
but it was just like, there was an aggression to the part of the country that I grew up in. I don't want to be like this. I really don't. I would, you know, I to this day, I see Birkenstocks and they look so comfortable, and I want to buy them. I can't, because in my head I'm like, I'm gonna get the shit kicked out of me.
Nobody's gonna kick your ass anymore.
But
let
I actually think therapeutically, if I just put on a pair of those things,
it would be a breakthrough.
Yeah. I think I would have a breakthrough.
I feel like it's the Robin Williams scene from Good Will Hunting, where I'm like, it's not your fault,
all right,
dude.
This is all over the map. All right, so I downloaded some White Stripes, because the White Blood Cells, and then the White Stripes, their first album.
Mm-hmm.
Just that song, I Fought Piranhas, because I loved it.
Oh, it's great.
Then I Nick Cave. I downloaded Nick Cave. What is this one called? The Boatman's Call. The Blues Brothers. Carnival. Who's this guy here? Oh, see, Al Green.
So you would say your musical taste is pretty
TV
wide.
Themes. Rockford Files, Streets of San Francisco, Valley Girl soundtrack.
Dude, you definitely have like
Joy Division. Unknown Pleasures.
So it's a wide variety.
Journey. Stop Believing.
You have the shotgun of musical taste. It's a widespread.
Metallica.
It's everything.
Puppet.
So you got everything.
Fish. Rift.
Bell Biv DeVoe. Poison.
What this is. No, I just see like when I go through these
Beethoven's
periods.
Ninth Symphony.
No, but then I go through these periods of just revisiting my childhood. Led Zeppelin, Coda, a couple Iron Maidens, a couple Def Leppards.
Yeah, because that's the shit, dude.
Here's one, Leafhound. You got to get into them.
Tell them, dude, listeners.
Growers of Mushrooms. Got to get that one. Then Slayer, another Leafhound, two more Slayers. Oh, then a Whitesnake, Here I Go Again. That's because we were going to do that song. That was, oh my God. And then a couple of Panteras. Janet Jackson, Rhythm Nation, Jeff Beck.
See, what I love, and because this actually
the Birdman soundtrack. I was supposed to see that guy play those drums live, and I fucking...
What I love is that you actually answered the next question.
Meshuggah,
that's a great band.
Meshuggah, that's one of the sickest concerts I've ever seen.
You answered my next question, which was, how do you think music you can associate with particular emotions and periods in your life? But it's just, there is a thing about growing up on the East Coast. It was like, even the hip-hop... Like when I was a teenager in like the late 90s, and like there was like Wu-Tang and Biggie, and it was just much more like harder, if you want to call it that, EPMD, a little tougher. And then you go out to California where it's laid back, baby, and we're here to set, you know what
right.
I mean? Just very like the gangsta stuff. So
but
it's
I feel like you could get killed out here way easier.
Yes.
I judge it just by sporting events.
But like
everybody has this feeling that California is this soft place. I'm telling you.
I don't think it's soft.
Don't come out here and wear the hat of the other team.
No.
If you want to have an enjoyable afternoon. Biggie Smalls. Now, whenever I hear that first album, which you can't get anymore.
Ready to Die?
No, that was the second one. What was the first one, Ready to Die? The
first one's Ready to Die. The second one's Life After Death or Live After Death.
Okay. Yeah, Ready to Die because... Puffy, as he was called back then, didn't have the rights to a lot of those samples. So he got sued and all that shit. So, and I actually used to have it on cassette. I don't have it anymore.
It's on this list. But actually, I think both of Biggie's albums are on this list.
But that album reminds me of Patrice O'Neal. Whenever I hear that, because we used to drive up to the Kowloon. He didn't even have a driver's license. He was just a city kid.
Yeah.
And I remember being I thought that was the funniest fucking thing ever. That he was like 23. Like, you don't have a fucking driver's license? I just kept laughing at him. He was laughing. He goes, Bill, I'm in the city, man. This bus is a train. These motherfuckers don't get licenses. You know what I mean? The fuck? If I lived out in the suburbs, I would have got one, right? So I used to give him rides. I used to drive into West Roxbury where he lived, and I would pick him up, and he was the one, you know, that I would test out my rap tapes on. I'd put it in if he looked at me and just, you know, he would just take the tape and throw it out the window. And I'd be like, all right, I guess that's some corny shit. And then I remember I had Ice Cube.
What was
Cube,
he throwing out? Wait, what
Ice
was he
Cubes,
throwing out?
Ice tea.
He threw out Ice tea?
Ice tea power.
He threw out Ice tea?
He just like, man, he goes, this is corny shit. Nobody gives a fuck about this guy. And I was just like, I don't know,
power.
Man. I kind of like
power.
He didn't throw
power.
That one out. I forget what. Probably like Young MC or something.
Yeah, Bust a Move. That's pretty.
I stand
pretty
by that album.
Really?
The rhyme's a little silly, but the fucking, I just like.
Dressed in yellow, she says hello, come next to me, you fine fellow.
Okay, but a lot of it was kind of like that way.
I mean, you
there
know.
Was a lot of silly shit.
Yeah, dude.
There was a lot of silly shit.
Yeah, but you're pumping
the guy
that.
With the big
you're
fucking,
pumping that with like a 350-pound black guy that doesn't have a license at 40.
Dude, the Humpty Dance.
I love Shock
I
G.
I love that
I
song.
Love,
I do.
I love that song.
Anyways,
I love it.
I love that song too. But anyways.
Anyways.
I remember the first one he actually liked was, I had Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted.
Fuck yeah, dude. And that's a hard song.
And
it's
looked
tough.
He looked at me. I was like, oh, fuck, he's going to throw this out. And he was like, you fuck with this shit? And I was like, yes, I fuck with this shit. Yeah,
but there's definitely a vibe that the East Coast.
And then I helped him with his white music.
What music is he like?
Well, then he got totally into Led Zeppelin, which I couldn't fucking believe he was gonna, because they were ripping off all this blues shit. I thought he was gonna be like, man, this is just this guy. But if you look at Patrice towards the end of his life, he was really getting into some old blues stuff. And there's this great clip of him on the old Opie and Anthony show of singing this blues song with the guy who took over for Dickie Betts and the Allman Brothers. What the fuck's his name?
I don't know.
Incredible player. I just fucked up because I don't know his name. But I think he probably, you know, you get into a band and you're like, oh, that's a cover of this. When Zeppelin finally started writing Howlin' Wolf instead of Page Plant on their albums, then you're actually able to trace it back. So I think that he was able to do that.
So definitely you think that that's just like growing up on the East Coast has kind of like set you into that path of music, right? Like growing up listening to Zeppelin.
It affected the kind of comedian that I was, the kind of music, whether I wear sandals or not. It's just, you know, where you're from is definitely, there's a, I think it's one of the reasons people say, you know, why are there so many comics from the Boston area? Why are people so funny from that area? It's just a hilarious, massively dysfunctional place to grow up in. And any little stupid fucking thing, it's like all of a sudden the bus rolls over you. And so there was always that, you could never get comfortable. And there's something about those sandals. I'm gonna be too comfortable.
I'm getting you a pair of Birkenstocks. I swear to fucking God. So what did you know about the White Stripes before I told you to listen to this record? After I'd even given it to you, I was just like, oh, this will be something that I think he'd like and we'd be able to talk about. But then the more that I listened to the record, that was the more I was like, oh wow, like there's a lot of shit. But we'll get into that. Like,
no, I have always loved the White Stripes and Jack White's music and all of his bands and shit. Like I've always been into it. But when he came out was when I was in a really difficult
2001.
Period. 99, 2000.
Yeah.
I was in a really difficult period in my career where I kind of lost everything.
I was watching.
I just had to start over again, and I didn't have a manager. I didn't have an agent. I just had nothing going on, and I was going on the road. I was that, you know, Tuesday through Sunday fucking guy, and people were just coming down to the club because it was something to do. I was getting, you know, it was $1,200-$1,500 for the week, all inclusive. So after your ticket and all the bullshit, you came home and taxes, you were coming home. You were working for a whole fucking week for like, you know, $450 or whatever.
Jesus, yeah.
Probably like $600, but I was living in Manhattan, so it was just eating it up, right? Sleeping on a futon, and that was the first time it was starting to creep in. Like, oh, am I going to be the guy that doesn't make it? And then I had massive issues with fucking women and intimacy and all commitment and all of that shit was coming to a head. I had a relationship that fucking ended and all that, so I was a mess. So all this music came out that I kind of was hearing, but was missing it.
Yeah.
Like, I heard the White Stripes on the radio, and it wasn't until, like, their second or third album that I finally got into them, and I was able to distinguish them literally. So it was all just this, you know, that was like the White Stripes, the Vines,
the Hives,
the Strokes, and all of this shit all came out. But and it's unfair because Jack White was so much different than them. But the way they were packaging it in the stores, it was all the somethings.
Well, this was like that music that you were saying is kind of like the not low fidelity, but how did I write it? It's like you have to see what they were coming out of, which is like, we were coming out of like U2 just coming out with It's a Beautiful Day. Limp Bizkit was popular in 99.
Eminem had
Good
come
Charlotte,
out in
Sum 41, DMX, Missy Elliott, Eminem, all the boy bands. So that's
the 90s was so much fun, man.
It was so much fun, dude. I loved it.
It was
I loved the
fun
90s.
Fucking time.
But then this, the White Stripes and the Hives, the Vines, Black Rebel Motorcycle Club is kind of like their grunge era. Right. This is like, it got too flashy, because that's kind of what happens in music, always, where it's just like, all right, dude, you know, calm down with the pyrotechnics and the spandex, and now put on a flannel shirt. And then from that, it just kept growing. And after Nirvana, it just kept going back where everything, Metallica cuts their hair. They start looking like, you know, up to date rock stars. And then it just turns back over where they get rid of all the you know, the electrical.
I mean, you can only be sad for so fucking long. You know what I mean? You want to be happy for a while.
Exactly. But that's the thing, is that it's ebbs and flows. It's like little lasagna bumps. It just got to go up and down.
That's
just
why
like
I don't believe in heaven.
Neither do
I. It just emotionally doesn't make any sense.
Buddhism does it for me.
For the whole, your whole rest of your life. Isn't this great? This is unbelievable. Like, how long can you fucking sustain that before you're like, all right, buddy, it's great. I get it. It's fucking heaven. Shut up. You just want to trip somebody.
But you're in heaven, though, at the same time.
There would be so much tension.
Dude, but you'd be up there. There'd be Bonham up there. There'd be, you know, Jimi Hendrix. There'd be Patrice and Lenny Bruce.
Actually, they'd probably be singing Roll Out the Barrel. Mitch Miller shit.
Yeah, but it was definitely like a weird time in 1999. So what do you remember listening to during that time? So if your life was kind of in turmoil and you're out back on the road, are you just staying into that lane of just AC/DC? It's a long, were you just like listening to It's a Long Way to the Top if you wanna to? Which I just got
I was
into.
Trying to get caught up. I think at that point I was finally getting into Nirvana. I always liked Soundgarden and Alice in Chains. Those were the two bands that came out of Seattle that I just couldn't ignore. Mm-hmm. But I definitely had that older person like, what's this Seattle stuff? Like, I like all the LA stuff.
I know.
It just knocked them off.
We talked about that. We talked about where I can still, I remember when MTV showed the Smells Like Teen Spirit music video. Like, I remember that. And then right before that was Nelson's, like, I can't live without your loving. Oh, yeah. So it's just the complete fucking opposites. But it was just like, how could I not? How could a kid that's 11 or 12 years old not be like, yeah, dude, Nirvana's way cooler than fucking these two guys dressed in like denim outfits. They look like Britney Spears at the VMAs and they were guys. I mean, it's like, it's just
Gunner and somebody.
Gunner and Stunner. They're a professional wrestling duo now.
Well, I actually think back in that time I was listening to Eminem. Was really inspiring to me because there was an album that he put out. This might have been a little bit afterwards, but on the back cover, it was him just sitting down on a stoop or a stairway, and he was writing.
It's like all of his records. All of his records, he's on a stoop or he's. I feel like he's. All of his covers are stoop covers.
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know.
Because I just don't remember. I just remember him sitting there writing, and I just felt like he was not only immensely talented, but he was outworking everybody, and he was selling all these albums, but he was still acting like he was still struggling. And that was always like the Jordan. Michael Jordan did that. Like, he was the best guy in the league, and he would practice like he was trying to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then he led the league in scoring and all that, and nobody talked about his defense. And then he got so good at defense. You know, talk about my fucking defense now. And he just became like this complete player like you'd never seen. And I felt that he was kind of – like, I have this weird thing where you don't have to be a comedian to, like – I can see somebody do something like – like somebody just taking pride in fucking building a walk-in closet, just the way that they're so meticulous.
Sure.
And if there's a passion there,
then
it'll make me it'll either get me going or I get like this wave of guilt like, wow, I'm not working this. I need to work harder at what I'm doing. This person is crushing it. I think that's where I was. I guess maybe, the Strokes. And the only song I ever heard was that song that they always played.
Just to give you an idea of what was popular,
Casablanca?
Dude, this is in 2000, and Julian Casablancas,
dude,
I think
like,
that's his name.
Did he need to front a band with a name like that?
Julian
Casablanca?
He's like an heir to like the Spiegel fortune. They're all like New York avant-garde. Their parents hung out with Andy Warhol. Like, the Strokes were like, I mean, they were the coolest.
Isn't Andy Warhol's kind of the first Me Too guy when you really fucking read up on him?
I don't know enough about him.
Yeah, he always seems like he was fucking, people stayed there for 3 days and they only want to be there for 20 minutes. They come to and they're covered in plaster.
How have we shot 4 movies already? Oh, because you've drugged me.
Yeah.
All right. This is what was popular. This is what I think MTV's Music Awards. These are the songs in 2001 that were all nominated to give you an idea of what's going on when this record, White Stripes, White Blood Cell, came out. You got Limp Bizkit, Rollin'. Remember that piece of shit?
Oh my God.
Gotta go rolling. Even the way it started off was, you know, all right,
partner.
Keep on rolling, baby. You know what time it is. I mean, that's just... And that won an award. Then you have Aerosmith, Jaded, Linkin Park, Crawling, Stained, It's Been a While, and Weezer, Hashpipe. And then on July...
What year was this?
This is the date of the record being released. July 3rd, 2001 is when it was released. Now, a little couple of interesting facts.
I remember my friend telling me that he really liked that Stained song. That seemed like 7 years ago.
Dude, it seems like so...
Not 17
it's
years.
It's been a while. Dude, Stained was huge, dude. Looking back at it at the time, like, I wasn't into that stuff. And now looking back on it, I love all of that stuff.
Some fucking podcast I was listening to. And this guy was always playing these songs. And he was going, so why am I playing this cheese? He always kept calling these songs cheese. And one of them was like The Police, Every Breath You Take. It's that song. That song is a fucking masterpiece.
That's iconic. Yeah, that's just a hipster.
Write a song
that's
fucking good and it's a hit. Like, he's sitting there acting like the whole time, like the fifth fucking thing I listened to, we go, why am I playing this cheese? I can't remember what the fuck it was. I was just like,
it's just a hipster being a hipster.
Like, who is that's this fucking guy?
That's a hipster being a hipster. Some of the weird things I started reading about this, but look what was coming
out.
You
know what's out. Weird about hipsters is none of them think they are, like...
They don't realize that they're hipsters?
Like, a neo-Nazi knows he's a fucking neo-Nazi, but for some reason a hipster can't fucking figure out that he's a hipster. When you figure if you're going to deny something, hey, man, I'm not into Hitler. What the fuck, right? Those guys are like, no, yeah, you got me. You got me pegged, dude.
I love
you're
Hitler.
Good at this, man. You've always been good at reading people.
Goebbels, Himmler, all of them. I love all of them. Yeah. I mean, they're all great. Yeah. Even
misunderstood. These were doctors, a lot of them. Sorry.
It's all right. My next question is, who is your favorite Nazi? No, I'm kidding. Stats about this record.
My favorite Nazi movie. What's that? I don't even know the name of it, but there was this one. What the fuck was it? Over in Eastern Europe, it was this plot. These guys tried to kill him.
Valkyrie.
Oh, my God. That was a fucking killer
Tom Cruise movie.
He wasn't in it.
Well, that's Valkyrie. That's the one where
Valkyrie,
he's...
Valkyrie! Fucking Nazis!
Valkyrie! Fucking Nazis! Valkyrie me! We gotta kill Adolf!
Same mustache you used to be.
So you're coming off 2001 when all the Sum 41, all those bands are going
no,
on.
No, not his movie. I always wanted to kill Hitler when he said that. Not that movie. And not the movie where he flies the helicopter. This was in a different language, and it was about these fucking people. They tried to take the dude out, and then they ended up hiding in this church, and they held off the Nazis for like 3 days. And you can go there and still see the bullet holes in the side of the church. I mean, it's one of these movies. It's just like, I haven't done shit with my life. I don't know what the name of it is. I like to do that. I like to bring up cool shit, not to know the name of it, just to torture listeners.
That's what I do too.
Valkyrie!
So recorded in February of 2001. You know, it only took, they rehearsed for 1 week and they recorded this in 4 days. It took 4 days to record this album. This is Jack White's first record with a big label. And he told the sound guy and the mixer constantly throughout, he was like, don't make it sound pretty. Keep it dirty. Keep it the way we've always been doing
it. That was one thing I was going to tell you. I fucking love the way this record
sounds. Tell me, what are your first thoughts? So your idea of White Stripes prior to this was like, you heard them, you know about them, more now. But in 2001, you weren't into them. Like, what was your...
No, it wasn't that I wasn't into them. It was just I wasn't making any fucking money and I lost all my reps. So I was just like representation. I was trying to get my career...
Back on track.
It was one of these things where I always tried to pay attention to music and pop culture because you needed to know what was going on, or all of a sudden, you know, you're that guy on stage doing, hey, what's up with Dan Quayle, you know? So I was aware of them.
Quayle material must have killed back in the day.
But I tell you, like, I really just, you making me sit down and listen to this album as much as I did.
How much did you listen to it?
Oh, just, well, once I got into it, forget it. I just started listening. Like, oh, my God.
Give me how many times.
The drums on it is what
blows
me away.
We're going to get to that. If you want to start talking about Meg, because I...
Because Meg makes like Phil Rudd seem like a busy drummer. And then just some of the choices that she makes. She's like, every song, she's just like playing quarter notes, it seems. Where she'll leave out a snare or where she'll put it.
Yeah.
And then maybe not hit the snare and just hit the hi-hat. But the way the hi-hats are open, how it just... elevates the fucking song
They're powerful.
She's got.
I know. If you watch her play, it does not look like it's like that. She's exerting any sort of effort. But you close your eyes and you listen. It's just like she's fucking killing it.
In a weird way, would you say she's influenced by Bonham? Because they sound, the drums sound big like John, like Bonham's, but they're not nearly as intricate, and there's no solos like he would do. But it's just the power.
It's that shit that Bonham would do, where he would when he played something simple, because he could go blinding fast in the Moby Dicks and shit.
Yeah.
But when he would just play some simple musical fill, that was just, it was always there and nobody could ever find it. And he just, you know, knowing him, he probably just did it one night fucking around. He just heard it and played it.
Yeah.
And then left it alone. Like, now you got me thinking of Bonham. Like my favorite fill he does is at the end of the Wanton song.
Which one is that?
I like that one there.
Yeah, that one. And he just does this fill where there's that space, right? And he, throughout the song, he would play between his hand and his foot. You know, I just can't make the noise as fast as he plays it. So towards the end of the song, he just does something on the snare. So like the whole fucking song feels like it stopped for a second, and you almost fall out of your seat, and then he picks right up and comes back. And it's fucking grooving so goddamn hard. It's like, that's the type of shit that gives me the chills when I listen to music. It's not like, look, watching somebody play drums solo is fucking awesome and it's amazing and all that type of shit. But when somebody comes up with the perfect fucking fill,
yeah,
that elevates. Yeah. And then what I love is I love watching a live band that fucks around and doesn't play it the same way they played it on the record, because then somebody does something that surprises people. The reason why you go to see a band live for me is to see the singer or the bass player turn around and smile at the drummer when he does something, or somebody throws in something fucking extra. If they're not in a band where they got some fucking dictator up front being like, "Und I say, when you put the keyboards in?
Nein!"
Yeah.
So how would you, so like, do you think that Meg is pretty influenced by John Bonham in her style of playing?
I have no idea.
I'm surprised you didn't watch. Did you watch any of the videos? I'm assuming you probably.
No, I find YouTube'd. Videos are distracting. Well, first of all, every fucking time, I've talked about this before, whenever they show the fucking drummer, the amount of fucking times that they have the beat completely backwards. Like, they're going boom, crack, and then they line up the footage with crack, boom. Drives me up the fucking wall. Everybody else, they make sure they got even the bass player, the guitar player, the singer, of course.
Yeah.
Is always in sync, and the drummer never is. But, when I listen to music, dude, I go into, like a fucking fantasy world. And it's always me playing it by the end of it.
Yeah.
It's not Jack and Meg.
Do you go into your room?
I am in guitar. I am playing guitar. I'm singing and I'm playing. Whatever cool thing just happened in the music, I'm doing it.
Do you sing
and
in your car?
Everybody I know is watching me, and they're all like, "Wow, Bill, is there no depth to your talents?" And then somebody beeps at me because I'm going through.
You're
a
like, sorry about that.
Because I'm going through a red light. Sorry. I was fantasizing.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
All right, so how many times did you listen to the record since I asked you to do it? I think I gave it to you a couple weeks ago. I was like, just, you know, I know
and
you're
I
busy.
I didn't start listening until like 3 days ago.
We were supposed to tape on Tuesday, and then you...
Easily... over the last 3 days, like 9-10 times.
You listened to it 10 times?
I listened to it. I was at the gym today. I listened to it 2 times in a row.
That's how long I work out. I can tell you how long you work out. The album is Because I didn't put the time down.
No, it was like 1.5 times at the gym. I got to be honest. And then I drove home listening to it.
All right, what are your first thoughts the first time you heard the record? Like, when you finally got to sit down from cover to cover, like, what did you think of the record? What stuck out? That did you connect or latch on to anything?
This guy was getting out of a relationship.
Yes.
That did not go well.
Yes.
And I was like going, wow, man, there's a lot of, like, what is that song Expected? And in the end you hear, is it Meg going like, and it's just like, could you go get me? And then it's almost like out of tune, like shut the fuck up. Like, and I remember being in that situation, and then just the titles of the song, I Find It Hard to Be a Gentleman. And I was like, all right, this is the breakup album. And,
it's dude, this is, if you look at this right now, so I went through every song. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 songs about love, and then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs about him not changing. If you listen to it, it's either like the Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground is about a girl getting away from him. I'm finding it hard to be a gentleman is about him not wanting to change for a girl. Fell in love with a girl. Love expecting is about, I think them. What did I write down? They're trying to save the relationship. And then eventually she has a baby. Yeah. The same shit over and over. And then it builds to you're expecting. I'm expecting. I mean, that's about having a kid.
That's not even how I heard it. I superimpose like, when you are being a good guy. It's appreciated in the beginning, and then it's just sort of taken for granted, and it's expected. And then, like, even though you want to go do the dishes, there's that silent game you have to play in a relationship where you can't do the fucking dishes. So they notice how great it is that you do fucking clean up and pick up around that. That's how I took it. Like, there's nothing to do. I'm not a lyrics guy.
Neither am I.
Like, I will listen to a song 1,000 fucking times, and I'll listen to the guy playing the shaker. I'm all about the fucking instruments till I finally be like, oh, is that what that song is about? Like, there's a song I fucking recently had been listening to forever.
Which one?
I'm not going to say because of the time that we live in now. It's about this guy beating the shit out of his girlfriend, and I had no fucking idea. One of the verses is about that. I had no fucking idea.
You tell me off mic because I want to know. Huh?
No, just remind me and I'll tell it to you. It's just like, I just thought that this was like a party song. Because it was just one of those things where, like, the verses were sort of mumbled,
yeah.
And then it got to the chorus,
mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, happy fucking silly shit, right? And you're not really listening. And no, it's not Smack My Bitch Up. I'm not that dumb.
I know. I was trying to think of what song it could be. Like, I stopped loving her today.
It's not 100% about that. It's about this guy being a loose cannon, and one of the things he does is that.
There's actually a lot of that stuff in this record.
And it's actually by a former winner of American Idol, and that's the last. I love that you're thinking about. I'm just fucking with you. I'm just throwing you off the scent.
Like,
you literally just,
I'm
dude,
like,
dude, that
Ruben?
Was like, save that for acting class. The face you just fucking made, like, I'm gonna figure this out. Is it Bo Bice? Is it?
I love that you went with Bo Bice first out of everybody.
You know why? Because I wore a shirt one time down to the Comedy Cellar when he was in the running.
Yeah.
And the late great Todd Lynn. Jesus Christ. I said the late Todd Great. The late, great
late
Todd Lynn
great.
Said, Bill, shut the fuck up with your Bo Bice shirt. And I remember he was so proud of his reference and everybody loved it. Your Bo Bice shirt. So I never forgot his name.
I like the gray-haired guy. And it's not just because I had gray hair. Remember the dude that was like the soul singer? He had like a bowl cut. His name was like Taylor.
Was he white?
White.
Can I ever tell you how much I hate white soul singers?
Why?
They just bug me.
So is Michael Bolton included in that? Michael McDonald?
I don't consider him a
You hate Michael
singer.
McDonald?
No, I don't hate him.
Yeah, so there you go. That disproved your point. There you go. Moving on.
No, but I like when he played with, like, you know, the Asia guys there.
What are you talking about? What
fucking,
Michael McDonald played with?
The Dildo Band. Steely Dan.
Dildo Band?
Isn't Steely Dan a name for a dildo in fucking England?
I have no idea.
Roy, get your Steely Dan.
If I had
here.
Internet right now, I could look it up. But
I know. I don't have internet. My internet stinks.
We're stuck with the notes that I've taken. So what songs stuck out to you? Because immediately, for the first time I heard this record, Dead Leaves in the Dirty.
I have a kid. So the song that stuck out to me was that
Little Room.
And when he was playing, that sounded like a song that a little kid would love. It sounded like a little kid... excitement about the future, Like that to me, I don't know. I don't know what the lyrics are, but that is a, like the sound of that song.
So
that's a positive song to me.
It is,
and it makes me want to get up and do something.
It is. It is. That's what the blues does. Because the album I did a couple.
Don't tell me what the blues.
No,
does.
But
okay?
See,
the blues will do something to me.
But it's all,
and do something to you differently.
100%. But what they're doing, at least they're saying some pretty depressing things, but they're just saying it in an upbeat way. You know, with a nice guitar. I was just doing B.B. King's Live at Cook
Prison.
Did I ever
tell you how horrible it is to be jamming on the blues playing drums? It is the most boring shit.
It's just so slow and just...
Yeah, the guitar player.
The guitar's having
the fucking, like, yeah, the blues player, the harmonica, and you and the bass player.
No, surprisingly, Little Room is about being, what I got from it, it's about being more artistic when you were broke. And as you become more famous, you lose that passion. So it's like you're sitting in a little room.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing got much to do. And so he's talking about how when you're hungry when you're poor.
Right.
And then as you become wealthier, you lose that fire. Like, how do you?
You're looking at that right now. Last night I was going to go down to the Comedy Store and I didn't. I went to bed instead. And I said to my wife, I go, I'm getting soft, so I'm going out tonight. I don't want to be that fucking guy. Once you start selling tickets on the road and you don't go down to the LA clubs anymore. I always see that and they just disappear into their fucking homes.
But no, I wouldn't think that as a comedian, it's not like you don't want to be out. You're working on a shitload of projects. So I don't think there's any way of saying that you're not hungry. But how do you stay hungry though? Like with now that you've had the success, now that you broke out of where you were
easy.
In 2001.
The fear of losing all of it.
Ah, fear.
There you go.
So fear is what fires you up at any time.
That's why they also say, hey, if you have a kid, you'll get so happy, you won't be funny anymore. But how you stay funny is you are so happy, then all of these new fears come in of, oh my God, what if this happens to my kid? What if that happened? What if I messed up and this happened? And you just, like, that fucking panic of having this thing that you love more than anything you've ever loved in your life will feed your comedy like nothing you've ever had, you know? I heard the first one. Then the second one is just like, oh, man, I'm fucked. I don't have any more hobbies now, do I?
So that's how you stay hungry, basically.
I guess so. Are we doing this album justice? Because I think it's amazing.
It's fine.
I just love the sound of his guitar. It really commands your attention. Like, I feel like if you went to a bar one night and you're watching back-to-back-to-back bands or whatever, the second he goes, you're going to be like, what the fuck is that?
Well,
then the way the drums come in and everything, it's just like you would just know that you were seeing something different and these guys are going to be good.
Oh, for sure, man. I actually...
These people, no disrespect.
My first pass of this record when I listened to it, immediately Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground was what stood out to me more than anything, because it's just such a powerful song and I love that chorus. It's just so catchy. And that was one of the hits. And after the first few listens, like, I was into it, but I started thinking that a few of the songs sounded the same. Do you know what I mean? Not like entirely, but I mean just the lo-fi, but just the way that the chorus for Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground is dan 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 dan. Actually, that's not that one. It's so close to right. I'm finding it hard to be a gentleman. I can't even sing Dead Leaves in a Dirty Ground. It's they're different. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
no, well, I mean, AC/DC, you could, if you learn how to play guitar, I mean, you could play like 80% of their catalogs with a G, D, C, and an A chord.
Yes.
But somehow Malcolm could just switch up. That's the difference between someone who plays as a hobby and someone who's actually has a gift for it. Like, I never had a gift for it. Like, I am a complete, just a nerd. I'm like, basically, the way me playing drums is the same way as like a guy who goes to see a Star Wars movie and he dresses up like Darth Vader. It's like, wow, this guy's really into this movie.
What's funny about...
He's not good enough to be in the movie.
What's funny about this album is that, like, I listened to it once, and then I stepped away for a little bit, went back, and there were certain songs that I loved at first, and then over time of listening to them, I started pushing those away for some other ones. And now the songs that I liked at the beginning, I think are kind of like, they're still good. Like Dead Leaves is, I'm always going to go back to that one because that was the song that I got introduced by White Stripes. Because the real introduction was the popular song off the record, which is Fell in Love with a Girl. Do you remember that? That's Fella Lava the Girl. Yeah. And when I remember when that came out, I did not like that song. And I did more research on that song. And this is like Rolling Stone actually said it is one of the 40 songs that changed the world. They're putting Fell in Love with a Girl. It's number 40.
Right.
I mean, some of the stuff on there, Sweet Child of Mine, The Cure, Just Like Heaven, Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight.
But doesn't Rolling Stones just do that just to get people talking and to buy the limited edition, the 40 songs that changed the world? Because you can be like, oh my God, how can you leave Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head off of it? What's the matter?
My leg's cramping.
Uh-oh.
I'm fine.
Oh, does that happen a lot?
No, it just happened right now.
Oh, I was going to say. Get a masseuse, dude.
Oh, I've got one.
You got to do it. You know what I fucking learned?
What's that?
That after, I don't know how many years of being on the road, 20 years of being on the road, sitting in writer's rooms, sitting on planes, driving in rental cars, and not doing squats or anything, like I'm sitting on skin and bone. I have no muscle. It's like, you know when you pound out a fucking piece of meat?
Yeah.
Make it super thin. You know, the Italians do, and then they wrap it up.
You're a veal cutlet?
Yeah, I have two veal cutlets back there. So I got this sciatic nerve issue. Joined a gym, and I'm fucking doing legs.
Where are you going?
You know what's great about...
But don't tell everybody. I want you to tell you. The fans will show up, and they'll want to spot you doing shoulder press. Hey, Bill, you need a spot over there? I mean, I just saw your form. If I could help you out a little bit.
And that's another thing, too. I've corrected my posture. I'm in the process of doing it. And then also lifting weights properly. And I go to the gym now, and I swear to God, dude, like 65-70% of the people not only are not lifting the weights properly, they're going to hurt themselves.
Oh, yeah. Most people have no idea what they're doing. If you walk around the gym, most people are...
Because there's a thing, you just see somebody doing exercise, like, oh, I'm going to do... What are those for? Those for your tries? I'm going to do those. But you never stop to learn the form. Like, the thing most people do, you got to have your shoulders down and back or you're going to have a rotator cuff issue like I had, and I didn't realize that. And if you don't fucking do your back muscles and you just benching, what are you benching? Because that was all the 80s was about.
Yeah.
It's going to pull your shoulders forward.
Yeah.
And then you do those fucking things where you're yanking it up like you're going to set off some dynamite, you know? Except it's harder to pull up than push down, right? Those things pull your shoulders up and then you're fucked. And then you get into your 40s like me and you try to fuck where I was in my 40s when I fucked up my shoulder.
Yeah.
You go to bench press and all of a sudden, and then you feel the pain and then you're in the 80s. Oh, push through the pain. No pain, no gain. You do three more fucking sets and then you're like me.
But you look good though. And you how do you have a circulation problem? You play drums. Aren't your legs more active now?
Well, the problem is, that's not a circulation problem. It's a nerve issue. That's another thing too. Sitting down playing drums and all of that stuff. It's just like, that's one of the things that was making one of my left foot was going numb. I'm like, oh my God, do I get clots? Like what's going on? And I found this genius masseuse and she's helped work all of this stuff out.
Working the knots out. If it's not painful, then it's not a good massage. It has to you have to be like, oh God, please stop. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, no, it was like the first layer was all recent shit. Oh, yeah, I played pickup hockey and I didn't bring my stuff and I fell on my leg. And then the middle was like shit from the 90s. And then she got all the way down to the bone. This took like, I don't know how many months for her to work her way through all, like literally 50 years of gristle. And when she got down to the bone, I'd be thinking of shit. Oh, my brother used to fucking give me Charlie horses, dead legs, whatever you call them, used to kick me in the legs. that kid hit me with that stick. It's still in there. Oh, they can't do that shit now.
You can. The kids still do it. It's just that they don't. You know, it's not advertised. But the kids are still just as ruthless as we were. I think. I mean, yours.
I think it's more psychological warfare. I think like the bully guys are almost like how the girls used to be. Where girls didn't really beat the shit out of each other. It was like this. It was worse. It was like they spread rumors. They'd write shit in their locker, and they were just like this psychological.
But
just,
now it's like now we're gonna
attack.
Online.
We're gonna attack your character. Where it was just a guy who's like, all right, you're gonna get a bloody nose and some fucking lumps on top of your head.
Well, I'm finding it harder to be a gentleman every day.
I know you say you didn't get a lot of the meaning from them, but when I was going through the research of some of the songs and finding it hard to be a gentleman, it's about a guy that trying to be a gentleman to a girl, but realizing everything that he thought was a gentleman doesn't work on her. So let's take that away from being a girl.
Jesus Christ.
Hear this out. I mean, this is good.
It's just like...
And make her society as a whole. Do you find it hard to appease everyone? with your stand-up or just throughout life? And has a PC culture ruined comedy? I know this is a, these are deep questions, and you probably weren't expecting out of a guy wearing capris.
No,
but
there's standard. Everybody acts like, no. There's literally 100,000 people screaming and yelling on social media. And that's what the press is paying attention to, because screaming and yelling is that. But, like, yeah, people go to shows and they still laugh at what it, everything they always laughed at. I'm finding. I mean, look, you go down, you know, it's touristy crowd, or maybe if you did a college gig, it would be, but that would be more like a generation gap. But it's just like most people are cool and they understand that they're at a comedy show. So they don't take the comedian seriously. Now, you're well within your right to take the comic seriously, but just because you took it seriously doesn't mean I now meant it and I fucking owe you an apology.
Yeah.
You owe me an apology for wasting my time with your fucking complaining. Just go see somebody else. You're self-involved. I thought I was a self-involved one. I'm on the fucking stage. Do you realize how self-involved you have to be the one person in the crowd that didn't like it and think you're owed an apology? That's like that person should be a celebrity. They're so self-involved. They should have their own TV show banning the creators from the set, like all those psychos used to do.
Does that happen to you a lot? Like when you're on the road, like somebody will come up to you and be like pissed off at you?
No.
Did it happen when you were starting, though?
No, it has happened.
Of course.
But that's what they're going to focus on. They're going to focus on that. It's like when Hardwick got accused of that bullshit, right? All the negativity, bam, 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 bam. They showed all that. They didn't show two or three of his ex-girlfriends. Hey, I was in a relationship for 3 years. He never did anything like that. He's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. It's more clickbait. It's just clickbait, and it's just, if you look up clickbait, it's mostly negative shit, and then the only positive shit is going to be like, her teeth used to look like this.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed what they look like now. So they go into your vanity.
Yeah.
You know, do you have varicose veins? Are your eyes always bloodshot, you know?
So what is it? Vanity?
Do your glutes look like veal cutlets?
Vanity, hate, and I was going to say animal stuff. Anything with animals is clickbait. Yeah.
That sounds like a Prince triple album, doesn't it?
Oh, I love animals. That's my favorite part of the record. Well, actually, if you go through this, because that's coming off of I'm Finding It Hard to Be a Gentleman. And then the song that stuck out to me the most is, and I the one I enjoyed the most, was Offend in Every Way. Do you know which one that is?
Yep.
You do know which one that is. Okay, perfect.
Because you told me to listen to that one because you said that you were going to talk about it.
No, well, it's basically, if you reading the lyrics of it, it's about trying to fake it, but you just can't, which obviously he's having a problem with throughout this whole album because everything is
no,
him.
But I thought he was a decent guy. He's being a gentleman about it. What I like is he's not doing this sneering sort of like, hey man, like I'm saying the things you're thinking, but I'm telling it like it is. He's just like, listen, I'm not trying to be a dick. You know, I'm just
sure
you're mad because I'm saying what I feel.
Do you feel your whole career? Have you always kind of had the I'm just going to kind of say it and just this is what I believe attitude, or has that changed? You know, was there a point suddenly in your career, like maybe around 2001 when this was coming out and you said you were going through that shit? Did you just decide like, nah, fuck it, I'm just going to do exactly what I've been doing and just keep focusing on?
No, I was always trying to get better. I was trying to get better and get better and better because I realized right around then that I was not going to be the what they were looking for. All right. I wasn't the, you know, whatever, the moose-haired guy. You know, I tried that. I put mousse in my hair. They didn't give a shit. You know, I always tried with the looks. You know, when you're early on, everybody's wearing fucking black slacks with the. Remember that period? I think
yes.
You were still a teenager. It was black slacks with like the electric blue button down. Like agents and comedians for about a 6 month period dressed the same. It was like this weird sort of. If you did a showcase, you sort of dressed like. It was a little bit of Star Search. Mixed with some sort of late 90s cell phone salesman sort of look. It's really bad. It's really bad. But I just realized, you know, I wasn't the fat guy. I wasn't the good-looking guy. I didn't have a catchphrase. And then when the alt scene came in, I wasn't those guys with the beards and the hoodies and acting like I'm awkward and fucking, you know, apparently or whatever the fuck they were doing. 20-minute bit on Iron Man. Like, yeah. I just wasn't that. So I realized that I was going to have to be a numbers guy. Where it was just like, I was going to have to fucking do a good job repeatedly over and 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 over again. I was going to take the long way around. I knew that. And to this day, a lot of the comics that I like, you know, they're in that period in their career. And I just tell them, I was like, dude, it's going to take you longer, you know. And it's what Dave Chappelle literally said to me. He said to me one time, he was sitting on the stairs at the Cellar, and I didn't know he was there, thank God, because if I did, it would have affected my set that he was listening. But I went and I got off stage, and he was just like, man, he's like, your point of view is so dope, man. I remember that. I was like, oh, he said I'm dope. This is awesome, right? And but he said, he goes, if you keep doing that, he goes, it's going to take you longer, but when you hit, you're going to hit hard, is what he said. You know, I'm definitely a believer in that. And when you see, like, I call them kids, like somebody comes out with their first special and it hits as hard, like, say like that woman from Australia, how hard that fucking thing hit. And all of a sudden, the New York Times is going, this is changing comedy, and all this shit. There's a part of me, I mean, I'm superimposing how I would have handled it, which yeah. I would have been like, fuck. Hey, easy, man, easy. Yeah. Give me somewhere to go.
Sure.
So, like, I saw, like, I remember, like, when Dat Van won the fucking,
Last Comic Standing.
Yeah, I felt bad for that guy. He had, like, 10, 15 fucking minutes, and all of a sudden he's got to go around headline. Like, you just, as much as it sucks to be that person that it takes a longer time, you know, you're grounded as far as, like, it's sort of built it's built in bedrock. You're not just getting like, you know, like they shoot those t-shirts out at games.
So you're saying,
you know, like,
so you're
hey,
saying, yeah. So what you're saying, when it happens, you were ready for it when it started to happen because you've been working for so long and you've gotten to a point that it's just like, nah, this yeah. is.
And
this
it
is,
still really hasn't happened in a lot of ways.
I think it's happened.
Well, I mean, I'm still not an in guy.
I think you're the out in guy. You think yeah. that you're out, but you're really in.
No, this is the, oh my God. This is literally a conversation I used to have with Patrice. Patrice used to sit there looking at people going, this guy's an in guy. This guy's an out guy. And like, I knew what he was talking about. And I said, I'm an out guy. He goes, no, Bill. He goes, you're an in guy trying to be an out guy. And he says, what the fuck? You don't even know who the fuck I am. It was like classic his fucking bullshit. It's like, oh, what are you, man? A suffering artist? And we get this big fucking argument. And it's like, dude, do you think I'm trying to be sleeping on a fucking futon at 36, you fucking asshole? Dude, if they ever recorded some of our fucking arguments.
They were that good. Oh, I bet.
He's just
I can sit and just listen to you talk while we smoke a cigar, but just to have Patrice there, who is just, that would have been the shit, man. Is there any like tapes of that around anywhere? Did you guys ever do podcasts?
There's one of me on Opie and Anthony where we had this massive fuck you fight that we ended up like barely talking to each other for like a year after. Not a year. Now, you know when we started talking again?
When?
The Philly thing where I got booed.
Oh, so that's what.
Yeah, if you
it back
see
up.
Me in that set when I kind of say something to DJ, there was people yelling at me. I was like, "You guys are fucking heckling me too." All the comics had come out. That's what a lot of people know to help out, and they were yelling
things
Philly,
for you to
Philly
say.
Shit. Yeah, and I couldn't hear them though. Like I was either Voss or Patrice yelled out "Invincible," which I wish I had thought about because then I could have been the fucking Philadelphia Eagles. You guys suck so fucking bad. Some fucking cook, a busboy, tried out for your fucking team. Not only does he make it, he had a fucking impact. I could have done one of those. You know, and what's so funny, too, is then, like, all these years later, the Eagles come back and beat my team in the Super Bowl. How fucking funny. Like, I always think, like, that part of life is, like, it's weird. It's cool. I'm happy for the Eagles. I wish the Eagles hadn't beat my team so I could have enjoyed them winning. Because I love when a city that hasn't won for a while, like watching the Cavaliers, watching your Capitals win. I love
that. Was the greatest thing ever to have. And also to be able to, like, the way that you called me, or we were texting and you're like, I can't watch the game. So I was like, all right, dude, let me put you on I'll put you on the FaceTime. You can watch my
television. That's right. I was in England.
Yeah, you were in England. And it's just, there's a picture I took of like you just sitting there in the dark.
My kid was sleeping. My wife was sleeping. And I was sitting in the dark and you were FaceTiming. Oh my God, my wife walked in, she'd think I was looking at kiddie porn, and you were FaceTiming your computer screen the last 3 minutes of the game because I wanted to see Ovechkin.
That was so great.
Because all the shit that he got. And then what was so great to watch him be that happy and then to see that he cared that much. Like that picture of him like sleeping with the fucking with his arm around it. It's just like it's the greatest thing ever.
Just him when he turned around knowing that he's about to grab the cup and he looked at his teammates and just he made that like scream that like oh my fucking God. Like I just started like weeping from that.
Charlotte
that was
did that.
And that was when I just started slowly close the lid of the computer and put Bill to sleep so Josh could have his weep on.
Chara did that when the Bruins won. He let out some crazy yell.
Really?
And he's like, you know, fucking 6'10 with skates on. He was just like, like how much these guys went through to get that.
Well,
thing.
That's, you know, that's.
Let's get back to Jack White. How much do you think he makes a year just off of dun, 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 dun? Now, when people in the crowd sing it, And it's
Did he
on
get
TV.
Paid for that?
Does he still get paid?
I think he has to, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything that's like my TV show never re-aired, so I never got royalties.
Do you think
from
that
it.
He has employees that he sends out to every big game and they start it? They get in the crowd going, whoa, 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 whoa.
No, at this point, it's just ingrained. I know
I'm
you
kidding.
Are, but I mean, it's like that bass line is one of the most iconic bass lines of all time
yeah,
now.
Yeah, something with Another One Bites the Dust.
Exactly. He's actually, like, the more I read about Jack White, the more I actually really started to really, really like him. Like, if you look at the album cover to this, and this is the other question I wanted to ask you, too, is that the album's cover sarcastically parodies the amount of increasing mainstream popularity the band was receiving, which depicts the duo attacked by photographers. How? Yeah, so it's saying, because he's never been one to really enjoy being a part of the music industry. Also, if you can kind of hear that in one of the songs, I Think I Smell a Rat. Which is one of my other favorites. So, I think I smell a rat. Oh, I think I smell a rat. How good is your bullshit meter? Being able to read people.
In my world, it's good.
In your
good.
World, yeah.
In my world, it's good. I get outside of my world and I go right back to being cul-de-sac Bill. And I can be duped so easily. You get me in a Home Depot, you can fucking, you can run me around in fucking circles. I get in a comedy club, I've just been there long enough that it's just experience. But like, I don't have, like, I can read people now really well.
Yeah.
But like, if I get outside, you know, my little world, yeah.
So you're saying like a barbecue, somebody could take advantage of you at like a function, or you just
dude,
mean
you know
like
what happens a lot
Gelson's.
Of times? People get me with jokes. They're fucking with me, and I don't even see the as a comedian, I don't even see the joke.
What do you mean? Like they're like running material on you?
No, they're like breaking my balls. I can't even think of what that is. It's some comedic situation where you got to be in on it to get it, and I miss it. And then they always look at me like, you're a fucking comedian. How did you miss that? I'm not smart.
You keep saying that. I've heard you say that so many times, but you're like, you do research, right? Like you're
no.
nonstop researcher. I feel like you live on like Wikipedia.
No.
You're like a Wikipedia article guy. You're an article guy.
No.
You read the articles.
Dude, I read shit. Like I'll fucking look up like, I was looking up like I was watching The Simpsons, and I'm like, wow, how many episodes have they done? And then I just get obsessed with, what's the most episodes of any show anybody's ever fucking done?
Gunsmoke.
That's for that style. No, but they passed Gunsmoke.
The Simpsons is number one. Yep. Then Meet the Press is up there.
No, but the soap operas have like 15,000 episodes.
Yeah, but that's not real. That's
yes,
daytime.
Yes, that is real.
That's daytime.
Get in that writer's room.
That's daytime.
Get in that writer's room. Walk a day in this.
I don't. It's. I could
you
write.
Pick up their feather.
Dude,
pens.
I could
let me
write
what you say.
An episode of a soap opera in 20 minutes.
Well, I hope it's better than your Puddle of Mud song from fucking 30 minutes ago, because that was not even a B side.
I fucking hate you.
Do it to a D side.
La 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 la. I tried and I tried. So back to this about the album cover. How did you adjust when you suddenly went from just Bill Burr, you know, club comic to suddenly Bill Burr, like, you know, do you still find it hard? You say people get you. Like, do you still find it hard to adjust to that where now you're, because I've seen you, like, we were out smoking a cigar and we were about to do the jam and, like, it's nonstop. Just people are
no,
like.
No, but that's only because I'm standing right outside of a venue
true.
That I'm performing at.
So it doesn't.
If I walk two stores down to the 7-Eleven,
so you don't find that it's like, how often
people
a day
don't, dude, you want to hear something fucking hilarious?
Please.
I went over to Netflix the other day.
They
right?
had no idea.
I go over to Netflix to pitch a show with the All Things Comedy Network.
Yeah.
All right, and this guy comes behind the counter, and he's looking at me, he's going, Phil, and he looks at me, he goes, Phil? I want to be like, no, Bill Burr, I've been doing a TV show with you since 2014, and I've done 5 specials.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.
I mean, Grant, in defense of Netflix, it is an animated show, and I just do the voice.
Sure.
So, look, if you don't get recognized at the network that you have a TV show on.
She called you Phil.
Yeah, so I
Phil Fur?
Yeah, no.
Phil Fur.
Yeah. No, he was looking for a guy named Phil, and he was just asking me if I was that guy. And I literally said, no, my name's Bill Burr. I don't think he even said my name. I just said, no, I'm not Phil. And then it just struck me as hilarious. I am 100% comfortable with that.
Do you ever have a moment where you're like, no, I should, like, I'm Bill Burr. I should be recognized. You
no.
have any of those? Because you don't seem
no,
like you're very
I
humble.
I want everybody to know who I am when I'm selling tickets. So I sell the place out.
Sure.
But if the second the show's over, if everybody immediately forgot who I was until my next show, that's the perfect life.
And the show ends like, wait, why were we here? Okay, it's just
why
time
were we
to
here?
Go.
There was some.
Phil?
Bald guy. Was it Phil? Was it
Phil Fur?
Was it Bill? I don't know. Millie Mill?
So you handle it well then. I feel like you do. I remember.
No, but there's ways you can control a little bit. Like, you don't do extra TV.
What do you mean?
Like, if you're going on TV, you know, you go on because you're promoting something.
So you have an agenda. You have a
yes,
purpose.
They
yes,
should
I get
see
that.
You doing what you do, and then you leave.
Yeah.
That's like everybody that I respect does it that way. I remember the Beastie Boys. You never saw the Beastie Boys unless they were promoting a fucking album. Then they came on and they were fucking everywhere and the tour, blah, 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 and then they just disappeared. And you wouldn't see them for like 2-3 years. And right as you're going like, hey, man, those guys still together. Bam.
Bam. They drop
album.
Ill Communication and they're doing it to
better. I don't think anybody
concert.
Ever did it better than those guys. as far as playing that game where it's just like, we got to be out there where they still know who we are. They knew the exact, it was almost like they knew exact amount of time. I was like, you know, I really would love a new Beastie Boys album. And they were like, well, here you go, Bill. Here you go. And then they would go out on the tour and they always had the coolest fucking clothes that everybody would then rip off.
Everybody
like,
loves
I feel
it.
Like they were the first guys that went back to the 70s. They went back to the 70s and the 80s. That's how far ahead they were with Paul's Boutique.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we want to look like the 1970 New York Knicks on the road. Was their fashion sense. And it
I
made,
love the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
Just I love that it went they adjusted with the time and it was like they started off with like their hip hop. It didn't sound like it was like a rock and roll version of Run DMC. And then it was like when it started getting more into sampling, like they did Paul's Boutique and then Ill Communicate. It's just such they just everything about it. Like the last album, even though it was like it seemed like it was thrown together, it was still great. Because it just was like they had this style that nobody else could duplicate.
I love
and an
the
energy.
Drums on the first, whatever that first song is.
Kick it!
No, on Paul's Boutique.
Yeah.
It's MCA. And it's just
shore.
That guy playing, or whoever's playing 16th notes on the hi-hat. And it's just the way the drums sound. He's just playing a groove. It's mixed really low. It fades in. And then it fades out to all my Indian girls. He fucking says every nationality out there before it goes into that super loud drum fill that I was so psyched one day when I actually figured it out. Before it goes...
Oh, yeah. Hello, I know what you're talking about.
The Beastie Boys.
Did I do it justice?
No, well, we did.
No,
we did. Okay. It's because the whole idea of this is that I don't like... I do all the research, but in a sense, it's just a discussion about the album's just like it's like the celery and the carrots and the onion of the soup. And then the seasoning is whatever we want to go and talk about. The album is just something us to riff off of and just have fun with. But it's also like we get to listen to it. And for me, it's experiencing art.
It was definitely a fun homework assignment.
I think it's such a great fucking like I started realizing, man, that there's so many great albums that I haven't listened to. And that this is going to be a way for me to go through those and, like, you know, not only listen to them, but be able to, like, talk about them and really get to know them. And
hey, man, you don't have to defend your podcast. I think it's great.
I think it's fucking fantastic, dude. So you never said what was your favorite song on the record? What stuck out for you? What was the song that really connected with you? If there's any one that you had to say, this is the Bill Burr
song. You want to look
expecting
at it?
Expecting just be, and it's all because in the end when the woman goes like, can you just have any crack? Does that. I just really related to that. And Little Room I loved. What's the one about I think we're going to be friends?
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Ring the bell. Brand new shoes. Walking blues. Climb the fence. Books and pens. I can tell that we are going to be friends.
That's what it's called.
Is that what
it's
it
called
is?
It's called We're Going to Be Friends.
I love that one too.
Yeah, because I have
the positive song. This is the imagery too. I reminded me of my best friend when I was a kid. He's kind of a sad story, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
He was like my best friend, and he doesn't die or anything. So
okay,
he was my best friend, and all of a sudden, you know, we were moving away, and I remember I had to go across the street. I had to say goodbye to him, and like the moving truck was filled up for the last time, and we met in the middle of the street. It was like a Not a busy street. We met in the middle of the street, and there was some kid had just ridden by on a bicycle that my friend Mark had just talked to. And he said, oh, that kid, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's weird. We just had this conversation about the kid on the bike, and I was just like, all right, I'll see you later. And he's like, all right, I'll see you later. And I just got in the truck, and that was it. And I didn't see him again. 1980, I ran into him. It was 76. I ran into him in 80, and then I ran into him. He came out to one of my shows, like maybe 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we went, like, I saw him basically when we were 8 years old, 12 years old, and then we were like 50. It was really weird. But just that whole thing, the songs that he, the stuff that he was singing about, you know, reminded me, like, when I was a kid, your parents, they weren't iPads. They just sent you outside. So you played in the woods. And, you know, you lit shit on fire and all that type of stuff. And there was something about that.
Well, it's,
and I love that line where he's laying in bed and he goes, silly thoughts going through my head, like the ABCs and like, the, you know, the bugs that they were playing. Just thinking about your day where you just didn't really have a worry in the world.
No,
and you were just all excited about what was going to happen the next day. And what I like about that song is something I'm nervous about for my daughter is what I love about when I grew up was I actually could have a childhood where now I feel like, you know, these fucking parents, man, they should all get a union and just all agree not to give their kids cell phones.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to have the fuck up parents who just banged without a condom and now they have a kid and they just shouldn't have been parents. And that kid's going to have a smartphone and he is going to go to school and just the shit that kids are going to be. I mean, the fact that a kid can go on a cell phone and just look at murders, actual murders or porn and all. Like, I honestly, I've learned as an adult, I never should have looked at that shit. Like, I did brain damage.
Yeah.
Looking at that shit. Like, I should not have looked, you know, I was more of a porn guy. I stayed away from the murder shit.
Yeah, but even the porn back then, you know, you were watching, like, you know, what is it, Exit Through the Green Door or fucking.
Well, so much of it was hidden from with the pubic hair. I mean, you couldn't really see what was going on. and the horrible lighting.
It's like, just all hair. You're like, is that my rabbi? Why are all the male porn stars Jewish? And they're all named Herschel.
Yeah, but, like, I just think kids, like, dude, like, I saw an article one time in might have been Rolling Stone where they were talking about like boys who watch so much porn, but online porn, never had any experience. By the time they're actually getting with the girl for the first time, they said their body doesn't respond. Mm-hmm. Literally, like they can't get it up. It's like
because they watch so much 14, porn and they're so
desensitized.
Yeah, I remember.
Dude, what the fuck? And this is the thing. And then you do a Caitlyn Jenner joke, and then that's a fucking problem. Like, I don't understand. I just think there's so much money being fucking made with some of this shit. Like, for the life of me, I can't understand how we're going after terrorism this hard, but we're ignoring the people that poisoned our own food supply. I mean, isn't that the biggest fucking terrorist act you could possibly fucking do? Not to mention treasonous behavior against your own fucking people.
He wants to put, they want to spend, I think, another $5 billion to get Space Force started, and then Flint, Michigan is still Flint, Michigan. It still has the water all fucked up. It just makes no sense.
Yep, and you know what? We're never going to solve it, and it's fucking depressing. So let's say we wrap up this podcast and go smoke a cigar.
Perfect.
Slowly kill ourselves and get out of the way so we stop adding to global warming.
Perfect. All right. What do you think? I got to ask two more questions. What do you think? Who do you think influenced this record for Jack White? Like, what made them? Who are the people that brought, you know, that got them to this point?
Oh, I told you, I don't go that deep into music, but this This is one of these guys where you listen to him, him and Meg, and you're like, these are people that did their homework. And I would think that if I was to ever meet him and ask him, like, he would be bringing up all kinds of obscure people. I mean, definitely, it seems hardcore, old school blues guys.
Yes, B.B. King, any of the Kings, Albert King. Are you talking about Robert Johnson?
That shit we had to crank your own fucking phonograph.
Yeah, well, there was that
those
stuff.
78 speed records. Like, I feel like he was listening. Yeah, to that shit. And then I also think that he probably had, like, you know, old school country when country singers were like badasses and stuff. And then I imagine a lot of the shit that I listened to. There's no way he probably could have avoided it when he went to the mall.
Definitely the Stooges. Definitely Led Zeppelin. That song that's just that reminded me of Sabbath. I heard Nirvana in this. Johnny Cash, 100%.
Yeah, he's a badass. I actually did an album with. I released an album through his company, Third Man Records.
Was it the Carnegie?
The Carnegie Hall one.
Yeah,
and his Third Man Records there in Nashville. If you ever get a chance to go there and go see a show or anything, it's the coolest.
You have a lot of similarities between you and Jack. You both worked in a warehouse, and you're both very pale. I noticed that.
I was going to say, talent wise, he's got me beat by
I will have
a pasty leg contest with that gentleman.
I think he's a little bit paler than you are. Which
yeah,
is
but
weird,
I think that's but I think that's because he stays in the studio till 4 a.m.
Probably, but you're in the writer's room for fucking 12 hours, but then you're sneaking out coming to jam.
I wonder
with
if
us.
He needs to do squats too.
He's in fantastic shape, dude. He's gotta be. He never changes. He literally looks the same way. If you look at the album cover for the first White Stripes record to the last record he just put out, he hasn't changed. He still has the same haircut, the same look. And I think that's what I love about him. I think that I love that he's got that Miles Davis-esque style of performance, which is I want to form a super group. I want to do this kind of music. I want to do an album with Loretta Lynn. You know what I mean? It's like he's challenging himself. And, you know, when he ended the White Stripes, I mean, it was the time. They had done everything.
Right.
They had done everything. And I don't
what
think
is Meg doing? Who's she playing with now?
I was trying to find about Meg. I didn't do any research on
Watch,
her.
There's going to be a Meg White album come out tomorrow.
I hope so, man.
No, just the Beastie Boys shit. You know, I'd love to hear her play on an album again. Bam, there you go.
I love Meg. I was a huge fan. I always thought she was cute, and I've always loved Jack. All right, here, last question. Let's go smoke. This is it.
I just love the sound of her drums and the way she plays them.
Well, that's why I think it worked out perfectly that this was the record, because as soon as I listened to it, there was so much stuff that I thought, all right, here we go. Booyah. I don't know which one I should ask, because there's two of them that are good.
I your hand up like you're a preacher.
All right. What song, fuck, man, this is because the guy wrote this one and I kind of like both of these. All right, which song on the album would you walk on stage to? If you had to walk on stage, I'm the voice of God, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, this is what you have.
All right, everybody, Josh Adamai is here.
You have to understand what I walk on stage to, though.
What do you walk on stage to? I mean.
I go on stage.
Valkyrie! Valkyrie! Valkyrie!
Okay, the inside joke for me. Which now will no longer be an inside joke, depending on how many people listen to this.
That's going
to
be huge, dude.
To get me into a stupid mood when I have a second show, because I'm an old man, to get me in a silly mood, I go out to Captain and Tennille.
Do that to me one more time.
Once is never enough. For a girl like
with
me.
With a man like
and always, it's like, clapping pleasant. And then hearing the music, like, what the fuck? And I don't address it. I just walk out and smile at him and start laughing.
That's what gets you present?
It just puts me in this stupid fucking mood because, you know, I get tired quicker now. It's just being older. So it's like I got a second show. I have a kid, so I try to fly in the day of. So if I have two shows, you know, I don't have any glutes, man. I mean, it's taking a lot out of me. Sitting on these chicken cutlets. So that's what I usually come out to. So
what are you walking out to? What's the one you're walking out to off this record? I guess it would be
and Susie Lee. I would go out to the Little Room song.
Oh, that's a fucking badass one to come out to. Yeah. Actually, you know which one I would come out to?
It would let them know how loud and obnoxious I'm going
to
be.
I would go out to Union Forever, which is, I wanted to say this before people forgot. Union
if
Forever.
I felt like I wasn't going to get paid, I would go out to, I think I smell a rat. I'd go out to that. Depends on the kind of mood I was in.
It was definitely, if I was going to come out, it would always still be Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground.
It's still, I just love that, that, you know, I can't, I, all I can hear is,
I can't
is
go the, out to a song, like, his, most of his shit is, it's too cool to come out to, because it's like, I can't follow that vibe.
Can I tell you something?
Like I said, you know, sometimes, like, sometimes I'll go up at the improv, and a few times they brought me up to, like, Back in Black. It's like, what am I going to do after that? And it's just like, hey, you know, Donald Trump's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, it always, you just pale in comparison, kind of follow fucking Angus and Malcolm.
This has been fantastic. I want to give you one little fact before we get out of here.
Am I going to get a factoid?
Union Forever, that was a song where it's like, you know, it's, there is a man, a simple man. Every lyric in that song is from the movie Citizen Kane. Every word, that song, that there is
a
man.
Oh, yeah, I saw that video, yeah.
There's a man.
I saw the Lego video. Well, you know what it was? It's like my laptop was filled up, so I couldn't fucking download the album. So I was watching it on YouTube on the treadmill. So occasionally I would glance down, but I don't like the Lego video was cool, but like videos, they distract me from the ultimate goal, which is hearing the music, right?
Yes. I completely agree. I think that video, like, I think maybe that's why I never liked Fell in Love with the Girl, because that was the song that was constantly being played on MTV. And I was the one that liked Hotel Yorba, or I liked,
Welcome
you know,
to the Hotel fucking Yorba.
That's it,
such
dude.
A lovely place.
Such a lovely place. Oh, God. I love you, dude. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me on.
I've got 496 more albums, so you know you're going to be on at least.
Give
you
me
know.
Something obscure that I haven't.
I wanted you to do
like that first Outkast one. I would have loved to listen, but you want somebody to be able to talk about it, like, oh my god, I was driving a fucking Ford Pinto.
No,
and I heard that song.
No, I don't think so. I think we're this really. I think it's when we can match it up perfectly, we'll hit it out of the park. But I also think that like you breaking down an Annie Lennox record.
I love Annie Lennox.
See, that's what I'm talking about, man.
She's so fucking badass. I love Annie
That's
Lennox.
Good to know, because she's got
Annie
like
Lennox
three albums
never
on
done
there.
Another redheaded lead singer. She's Woo! Not. There you go.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Bill Burr, ladies and gentlemen. To keep up with all things Bill Burr, go to his website, BillBurr.com. Follow him. Bill Burr on all social media, except for Instagram, which is Wilfred Burr. Also, I'll be posting his mixtape track listing on social media and on all music platforms. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast, email us at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow me on social media at Josh Adam Myers. Also, November 29th. I'm doing Shimmy Shimmy Ya at the Comedy Store in the main room. It's a super fun show where comedians give away real things from their life to audience members. November 29th at the Comedy Store. All tickets on my website at joshadammyers.com. And if you want to keep up with anything involved with the podcast, go to the500podcast.com. Also, we've got one of our first live shows coming up. It's going to be at Moon Tower Comedy Fest. We're doing a live 500 taping in April. Tickets are available. We'll have the link on the website to buy passes to Moon Tower Comedy Festival. If you've never been to Moon Tower, it's an incredible festival. So make sure you get your passes, and we will see you in the spring in Austin. Also, we created a club. We call it the 500 Club. In it, we're giving away merch like t-shirts, hoodies. We'll give you opportunities for live chats with me and my guests. Join the movement, guys. The 500 Club is the shit. And as long as you sign up to join the club, you get access to full uncut episodes, interview extras, all one day early on Record Store Tuesdays beginning in December. We show some of those OGs that have been with us from the beginning. They get everything. And some extra, extra love. The500podcast.com for all details on Patreon membership options to support the 500. Now, we just listened to the White Stripes from 2001. Now, here is an artist that is directly influenced by this album. From Seattle, Washington, we have Night Beats and their 2018 single, Her Cold, Cold Heart. And if you're in a band and were directly influenced by one of these albums or artists and you want your music featured on the 500, send your song to 500podcast@gmail.com.
Make sure you put the album and artist that was influenced in the subject line. Send us your music. We'll play it on the podcast. Next week is Boz Scaggs' 1969 self-titled debut coming in at number 496. So you guys have some homework to do. Thanks for tuning in.
Reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like the Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Next Chapter Podcasts.